This morning we're going to continue our exploration of valleys to see what more we can discover. To be honest, before coming here I hadn't really thought very much about this theme, and I hadn't realised that there are several words used for valleys in the Bible which actually correspond to a variety of different descriptions and types of valley. So not all valleys are the same. Some are wide and flat. Some follow the path of rivers or streams. And some are very narrow with steep mountains on either side. We've also discovered that there are lots of references to valleys in the Bible, and that important things happen in valleys, as well as important things happening on mountaintops. We've already heard that valleys can be places of trouble and battle. Valleys can be fertile places where things grow easily. And valleys can be places where people settle, good places to make our home and to live in. But today we'll be thinking about valleys that we journey through, where we might encounter danger or threat along the way. The passage that we're looking at is Psalm 23, a well-known psalm for all of us probably. But let's start by reading it anyway. So if someone would be happy to volunteer, and if everyone has a Bible and can turn to Psalm 23, that's going to be a help. So who would like to read this psalm for us? Do we have a volunteer? Yeah, great. Thanks, India.
The Lord is my shepherd. I lack nothing. He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside quiet waters. He refreshes my soul. He guides me along the right paths for his name's sake. Even though I walk through the darkest valley, I will fear no evil, for you are with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. You anoint my head with oil, my cup overflows. Surely your goodness and love will follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever.
Great, thank you. So as Debbie mentioned right at the start of the week, the Psalms were written as songs, as poems, and often they're in the form of prayers, which is something that makes them very useful and valuable to us. As you probably already know, there are 150 psalms, which I think is a lot, and there's a great variety of different psalms. So there are psalms that express thankfulness, there are psalms that express regret and sorrow, there are psalms that express anger and frustration and lots of other things. Some psalms are very long. Psalm 119 is certainly the longest. And some are quite short. Psalm 117, I think, is the shortest. And Psalm 23 is quite a short psalm, which is helpful because we can read it easily and quickly. And in some ways, we can see the whole picture in one look, in one go. However, that has drawbacks as well. If you're anything like me when it comes to reading the Bible, then it can be very easy to read something quickly and not really take in what it says. If I'm honest, I have to admit that I've a tendency to want to rush, especially if I'm reading something that's familiar to me. I just rush through, and it was the case when I started to prepare this psalm. First time I read it, it was just, and I didn't take anything in at all. And if that happens, then we run the risk of missing the very thing that God wants to say to us. I don't know about you, but one of the greatest things I found about reading the Bible is hearing God speak to me. At the heart of any relationship is communication. And if there's not much communication going on, then there probably isn't much relationship. That goes for any relationship. Before I became a Christian when I was at university, I'd never heard God speak to me. I never even thought it was possible to hear God speak to me. But now I have quite a different perspective. I know that God has lots of things that he wants to say. And so it's good to take time out to listen to what God has to say to us. So I'd like us to do an exercise. I've never done this before, but I was kind of inspired by Emmy the other day. It's an exercise that we're going to do on our own. You may have already done this before. You might even have done it in your quiet time this morning. But what I'd like you to do is just take the first phrase of this psalm. The Lord is my shepherd. And I want you to repeat it to yourself. Just quietly and slowly, just in your head where you're sitting. The Lord is my shepherd. And as you repeat it, try to put the emphasis on the different words in the phrase and see what that does to our understanding of what this means. The Lord is our shepherd. So, for example, try repeating the phrase to yourself a few times with the emphasis on the word shepherd. The Lord is my shepherd. There are other places in the Bible where we read that the Lord is something else. So, for example, the Lord is my refuge. But here it's written that the Lord is my shepherd. What does it mean that the Lord is my shepherd? So now try repeating the phrase, but with the emphasis on the words, the Lord, which in Hebrew is the name Yahweh or Jehovah, the name that God used to reveal himself to Moses. And let's see what difference that makes. So the Lord is my shepherd. So just repeat that a few times. The Lord is my shepherd. Who is my shepherd? It is the Lord who is my shepherd. Not some other person, not myself. I'm not my own shepherd. The Lord is my shepherd. So keep repeating the phrase to yourself and now place the emphasis on the word my. The Lord is my shepherd. The Lord is my shepherd. The Lord may be the shepherd of someone else. He might be the shepherd of David. But what difference does it make to emphasize that the Lord is my shepherd? And finally, try emphasising the word is in the phrase to see what that changes for you. The Lord is my shepherd. And now what I'd like you to do is to add the second part of the phrase. The Lord is my shepherd. I shall not want, or I shall not be in want, or I shall lack nothing, depending on the translation. Again, repeat the whole phrase to yourself. The Lord is my shepherd. I shall not want. And keep repeating the phrase a few times and ask yourself, what does that second part of the phrase mean to me? And repeat the whole phrase to yourself a few more times and ask yourself, what is the connection between the first part of the phrase, the Lord is my shepherd, and the second part of the phrase, I will not want, I shall not want? What is the logic behind that? And again, try emphasising the different words in the first part of the phrase together with the second part of the phrase and see if that adds anything to your understanding. So, the Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. See, because the Psalms are songs, they're poetry, interpreting the Psalms is not just getting one idea or understanding and sticking with that, but allowing it to sink deeply and to grow in meaning and as we grow in understanding. So we'll stop there. If you want to jot anything down of your thoughts from that exercise or insights, I'll just give you a moment to do that. But keep Psalm 23 open. So I've been trying to meditate on this psalm for a few weeks now. Even before I knew that I was going to be speaking on this psalm here in Sheldon. I'd begun to try and memorize this psalm and to repeat it to myself whenever it came to mind at different moments during the day, and especially if I woke up during the night or early in the morning, I would try and go through the psalm and think about it. And the reason I was doing that was because I was going to have some difficult meetings a few weeks ago, and I needed something to help me, some reassurance that I wasn't just acting out of my own initiative or understanding with my own way of thinking about things. I realised that even if I knew Psalm 23, there is a difference between knowing a psalm or any passage of the Bible and really taking it to heart. And it's often the case for me. I know what the Bible says, I know a verse or a passage, but it makes a difference if allowing what we know it says to go deeper, and perhaps the words become a prayer or a dialogue between us and God, or something that strengthens our faith, because we can say and affirm with confidence what has been written by someone else a long time ago. So having reflected on this psalm for a few weeks now, I'm just going to share a few of my thoughts and insights, and I hope that that will be a help to you too. So we know that David was a shepherd. So when he writes, "The Lord is my shepherd," he has an understanding of what that means that goes beyond my understanding of what it means to be a shepherd. He's using these words based on his own experience to testify of something that he's seen, he's known himself. I don't know if any of you have had the experience of shepherding, maybe. I have a friend in Paris who for a time was working on a farm that had hundreds and hundreds of goats. And it was quite an experience. And one thing she told me about working with the goats was just how exhausting it was. Because she would be taking care, occupied with the goats from early in the morning until late at night. And it was just constant. And even if I've never been a shepherd myself, the Bible often talks about shepherds and sheep. And in several places uses the image of shepherds and sheep as a description of God and his relationship with his people and with us. So let me give you just a couple of examples of verses that I find encouraging. So there's one in Isaiah chapter 40 and verse 11. "He tends his flock like a shepherd. He gathers the lambs in his arms and carries them close to his heart. He gently leads those who have young." And that's Isaiah 40 verse 11. And in 1 Peter chapter 2, just find it. And this ties in with what Debbie was talking about just earlier this morning. "Jesus himself bore our sins in his body on the tree, on the cross, so that we might die to sins and live for righteousness. By his wounds you have been healed. For you were like sheep going astray, but now you have returned to the shepherd and overseer of your souls." There are actually about 200 references to shepherds in the Bible, and even more references to sheep. But being referred to as sheep is not necessarily a very positive way of thinking about ourselves. One main characteristic of sheep is that they wander. They need looking after. It doesn't fit so well with our modern view of ourselves, where we are very capable, we're encouraged to be independent, have all of those abilities. But in this psalm, the emphasis is on what the shepherd does for the sheep, much more than what the sheep are like or what they do. So the shepherd makes them lie down in green pastures. He leads them beside quiet waters. He restores their soul or renews their strength. He guides them along right paths. This is David's testimony. It's a way of him describing his life with God. He has experienced God taking care of him in the same way as a shepherd cares for his sheep. It makes sense to David to describe God like this. I get the strong impression that the shepherd wants the best for his sheep, and he knows what they need. Green pastures where there's plenty of food, it's comfortable to lie down, rest, and places to drink where it's quiet and there isn't any danger. These simple things give renewed strength on a journey, and they're essential. And so the knowledge that the shepherd has, not only of what the sheep need, but also of their environment, where they live and they move around, that is really important. That's what the shepherd brings. And I think the big question for me has been, can I say the same thing about God? Does this match with my experience? Is God my shepherd? Can I say that? And if I say that God is my shepherd, what does that mean? It's very nice to say God is my shepherd, the Lord is my shepherd, but does that have more meaning for me in my life? I mentioned the difficult meetings that I had a few weeks ago. And one of the things that stood out for me as I meditated on this psalm was the insight into the motivation of the shepherd as he leads his sheep along the right paths, or paths of righteousness in some translations. The psalm tells us that he guides us in the right paths for his name's sake. David acknowledges that God guided him in his life in a way that was for David's benefit, but also because of the shepherd's reputation. It's also in the shepherd's interest to show that he's a good shepherd. Not all shepherds are good. Not all shepherds care as much for their sheep as God cares for us. And God also cares for his reputation, his name. So my prayer as I went into those difficult meetings a few weeks ago was that God would guide me. He would guide me in paths of righteousness for his name's sake. And I felt reassured that he would do that. So if God helped me in what I said and in my attitude towards the others, then it would also show something about him. He was acting out of care for me, but also out of a motivation for his own name's sake. And that really helped me. Another thing I've noticed about this psalm, and you probably have too, is that it's that the way David talks about God changes partway through the psalm. Did you notice that? So he starts off by saying things about God. The Lord is my shepherd. He makes me lie down. He leads me. He guides me. And then there's a change in verse 4. Even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for you are with me. So suddenly David is addressing God directly. He speaks personally to God, whereas before he was speaking about God. So at the beginning of the psalm, perhaps he's talking to himself. He's reminding himself, the Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He makes me lie down in green pastures. Maybe he's speaking those words to others so that they know what he thinks of God. But there's a change of focus. And then David is speaking directly to God. He's using the words you and your. And again, he's speaking of what God has done and what God is doing for him. So your rod and your staff, they comfort me. You prepare a table for me. You anoint me, you anoint my head with oil. So it seems like David has departed a little bit from this image of shepherd and sheep, because he talks about tables being prepared and feasts and cups overflowing and being anointed with oil. But it's the same theme. It's the theme of being cared for and protected and receiving blessing. And it's definitely a continuation from the beginning of the psalm. And at the end of the psalm, David talks about dwelling in the house of the Lord all the days of his life, or forever. So he could have written about dwelling, he could have continued to address God directly, dwelling in your house forever. But he goes back to talking about God as the Lord. So in one sense, that's quite a natural thing to do. So if we start off by reminding ourselves of who is God, what's he like, then it's easy for that to become personal. We start to worship God and address God and pray to God. But there may be another reason why at the end of this psalm, David returns to the Lord, talking about the Lord. And that has to do with something that he really wants to emphasize in this psalm. So we can ask the question, what is the most important element of this psalm? Where is it to be found? And as you might know, in Hebrew poetry, there are different ways of structuring poems. And it's the structure is used to underline something that's very important. And if we're aware of the kind of structure, then we can see it sometimes in different passages or psalms. And it draws our attention to something that's being highlighted. So this particular structure is called a chiastic structure, a chiasm. And the way it works is this. The verses are paired together and have some connection or similarity. So look at Psalm 23. So the first verse and the last verse are linked, and then the second verse and the second to last verse are linked, and the third verse and the third to last verse are linked, and so on. And often you'll find something right at the centre, and that's where the attention is being drawn. So we're more used to a structure where things are building up to a conclusion, like climbing up a mountain. You finally get to the mountaintop. That's the big important thing. But this chiastic structure is another way of drawing our attention. So look at the first verse and the last verse and tell me, or it doesn't have to be the verses, but the first phrase and the last phrase, and what do they have in common? Now, I'll give you a clue, it's just one word.
Lord.
So Lord Yahweh, the name, is only right at the beginning and right at the end. Okay, so Steve, you've got the next thing. So if we go beyond that to the next idea that's at the beginning, at the end, what would that be? You talked about provision. How do you see that?
I said provision, so I lack nothing.
Yep.
Goodness and love follows us.
Yeah, all the days of our life. So it's kind of the abundance of God's provision is like the next idea at the following thing. After that, what do we have? You might start to struggle because this is a translation from Hebrew, so it's not exactly the same words in the same order necessarily. Any other connections that you see?
It's waters and overflowing.
Exactly, yeah, exactly. So the idea of things flowing, cups overflowing, oil being poured and being led beside quiet waters. There might even be something there about dwelling, just before that, dwelling in the house of the Lord and lying down in green pastures. Not quite sure. Okay, so we're moving towards the centre of the psalm from both the beginning and the end in two directions. Anything else that kind of is the next idea that might connect? It's a little bit more tenuous.
God's presence in whatever paths we're going.
Yeah. So being guided in paths of righteousness for his name's sake, and having a table prepared for us in the presence of enemies. So there might be a sense of God's purpose, motivation, almost vindication. So being led in paths of righteousness, because that's the right thing to do. And if you do the right thing, then even if you have opposition, even if there are enemies, then one day there will be a table prepared in the presence of those enemies and they will see who was right. So that brings us right to the heart of the psalm, which is appropriate because our theme for this week is about valleys, and we have, even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for you are with me. Your rod and staff comfort me. So that's the heart of the psalm. And here the word for valley is the word that describes a narrow valley with high mountains on each side. And It's a dangerous place to journey through because, as you know, when the sun goes down, it becomes dark, it becomes cold, it becomes dangerous. You can probably imagine the kind of place we're talking about. It's a valley where attacks can easily happen. There is evil to fear. David describes himself walking through this valley, so it isn't a place to settle. He's on his way somewhere, being led by the shepherd, and more importantly, being protected by the shepherd. The only reason not to fear evil in this place is because the shepherd is with you. He has a rod and a staff for fighting off attacks and for keeping the sheep on the right track. That's the shepherd's job. A sheep on their own would be in very grave danger in this kind of valley. And I was struck by the fact that so many translations say, even though I walk through the darkest valley, or even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death. And the word in Hebrew is actually made up of two words. So one word means shadow, the other word means death. So it's not surprising that some translations, it's the valley of the shadow of death, because the word is actually death shadow. But rather than it being when I walk, even when I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, you know, one day if I find myself in this place, I will fear no evil, for you are with me. I quite like the translation that says, even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, because that suggests that the valley of the shadow of death is actually where we are most of the time. Because a shadow is cast by something that exists, something that's real. And death is the ultimate reality in one sense for this life. If it wasn't for God's rescue plan, death is it, our ultimate destination. And that casts a shadow over our lives. Jonathan yesterday evening was talking about death in various forms. But for me, it's as if David is saying, even though I'm walking, I'm on this journey through this valley of the shadow of death, and it's the place that I'm going through all of my days until I reach the final destination. The thing that makes the difference is it's not that there's no evil, but that we don't have to fear evil because God is with us. And I'll just read a verse from Hebrews where Jesus, where it talks about Jesus and death and fear. So this is Hebrews chapter 2, verses 14 and 15. So since the children have flesh and blood, he too, Jesus too, shared in their humanity, so that by his death he might destroy him who holds the power of death, that is the devil, and free those who all their lives were held in slavery by their fear of death. So our fear of death can imprison us. Sometimes we avoid it because we simply don't think about death. And yet, the book of Ecclesiastes, or in the Psalms, we're encouraged to number our days aright, to think about our lives as being temporary, our current existence. Yesterday there was a verse from Isaiah that talked about flowers of the field and things being temporary and short-lived. And that is life. That is life. This word for the valley of the shadow of death is actually found quite a lot in the Bible, but it's most concentrated in the book of Job. And we know that Job's experience of life was a very dark valley, influenced by the death of his children, and it was a difficult place for him to be in. But we learn that just as God was with Job all the way through that, even if he didn't realise it, the reality was that God was with Job. So he's with us, and that is the thing that, as we go into our discussion groups now, it'd be great to explore and to talk about what does it actually mean that God is with us? What does that look like and what difference does that make? So God being with us is this key promise in the Bible. We read it at the beginning of Joshua. It was God's promise to Joshua. And there he says, just as I was with Moses, so I'll be with you. So it was true for Joshua, it's true for Moses, it's true for David. Jesus, as he leaves his disciples, says, all authority in heaven and on earth has been given to me, therefore go and make disciples of all nations. And then a little bit later, and I will be with you always to the end of the age. So this is a key promise. But what does it mean? Something that's worth exploring together. And definitely a promise that we have to hold on to. Even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death. That's, I think, what we are doing now. We are walking through the valley of the shadow of death. I will fear no evil, for you are with me. So important. So let me just finish by reading a verse from Ezekiel 34, which you may, again, have read this morning in preparation. But I didn't really know about this chapter until Steve pointed me towards it. So, and it's all about sheep and shepherds, but just let me read.
Didn't have a long time.
It may have been, but it's a big book. So Ezekiel 34, and I'll read from verse 11. For this is what the sovereign Lord says. I myself will search for my sheep and look after them. As a shepherd looks after his scattered flock when he is with them, so will I look after my sheep. I will rescue them from all the places where they were scattered on a day of clouds and darkness. I will bring them out from the nations and gather them from the countries, and I will bring them into their own land. I will pasture them on the mountains of Israel, in the ravines and in all the settlements in the land. I will tend them in good pasture, and the mountain heights of Israel will be their grazing land. There they will lie down in good grazing land, and there they will feed in a rich pasture on the mountains of Israel. I myself will tend my sheep and make them lie down, declares the sovereign Lord. I will search for the lost and bring back the strays. I will bind up the injured and strengthen the weak. It's great stuff. So three questions, if you need them for the discussion in small groups now. What do you find interesting about this psalm? Second question, what implications do you think this psalm has for us? Given that it's David's testimony, he's not telling us what we should be like. He's just talking about his relationship with God. But what implications does that have for us? And the third question, what impact do you think this psalm could have on our lives in the future? If we take it to heart, what do you think the impact could be of taking these words to heart?